If you want Colts talk all year long, you're in the right place. This is the official Colts podcast, giving you an updated look at what's new with the Horseshoes.
Gets off to Taylor. He's in. Touchdown. INDY. Fires that way. Picked off. Darius Leonard at the 5-yard line. Plants in the pocket. The Colts bring it down. A sack for Indianapolis. Steps up into the end zone. He throws. Michael Pittman. Touchdown.
Let's get the podcast started.
Lara, any cavities today?
No cavities.
You're good? Cavity-free?
No, it's just a cleaning.
So you're all straight, even all those sweets that you ate last night, watching Die Hard for the first time at age. Come on now.
Yeah, I know. Are you asking me to disclose?
No.
Oh, God.
No, I just didn't want to do that to you. I didn't want to do that to you. But you watched Die Hard for the first time.
First time, yes.
And what'd you think?
I thought it was good. And yeah. I did have some sour Mike and Ikes. So you are correct that I did have some candies, if you will.
You indulged?
I did indulge. yeah, I thought it was good. I enjoyed old school Bruce Willis.
Die Hard came out in what, 1988?
88. We looked it up. Yeah, I thought it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed. Jump into the festive holiday spirit.
This is a debate I'm not going to have, but that's good. Whether or not it's a Christmas
movie. You know who is in the same company as I watched Die Hard for the first time last night as an adult? Zaire Franklin.
Is that right?
Yeah, I tweeted about it.
Is that a coincidence?
Yeah, complete coincidence.
Really?
I had no idea.
Does he also think Carl Winslow got robbed of the Oscar 33 years later? Like, you come in here and you're like, I just watched Die Hard for the first time.
No,
Carl Winslow got robbed.
Z and I are going to have a Siskel and Ebert debrief session on Die Hard in the locker room today. For sure.
Yeah. Hans Gruber, man, one of the greatest villains of all time.
I enjoyed it, but I'm a simple person. And I made it. The thing was, my husband was most impressed that I made it through the whole thing and never fell asleep.
That is impressive for you to watch a movie, period.
It is. It really is. Especially after a really late night, Monday. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're still kind of, you struggle a little bit. You're coming off the long holiday weekend. You got a Monday night game. I mean, I was home at 1:30 or something after that game. Couldn't fall asleep about 2:30.
Yeah.
So my whole week's been a little upended.
How many movies a year do you average in terms of viewing?
Like to fruition?
Well, just movies that you watch, period, because you're not a movie gal.
No, but I'll start a lot, and then, I'll fall asleep, and Dan's like, yeah, I watched 6 movies while you were asleep last night. I don't know, 1.5?
Yeah, I'm not.
Not a movie person either.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I would say my movie viewing has gone way down since children.
See, this is why I have a hard time watching movies, because I don't like to feel like I wasted my time. So if I get, Dan and I did watch a movie on Saturday night, we did watch this movie. So I've watched 2 movies in the last week, which is more than I've watched in the last 6 months. And it was bad. It was called 7 Days to Las Vegas or something. This guy has a bet where he has to walk to Vegas. I don't know. And it was awful. And I was like, I feel like I just wasted 2 hours of my life where I could have been watching something, that was expanding my brain, like football or Friends.
Friends, the TV show. Because you do like Friends.
I do like Friends.
The TV show.
I do.
Yes.
I said I'm simple.
I've caught you watching that on the TV on the plane a handful of times as a time killer before we land.
That's true. When I'm not bugging you. Usually I flip around in my seat and I'm popping over and I'm like, Maytay, what you doing?
It kills time.
Yeah. Rick Venturi is one of the best to sit on a plane because he will keep you entertained for hours.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, JJ, you can go to Hawaii with Rick.
JJ, what's up, man? Your teeth clean like Lara?
No, I'm getting next week during the bye week.
Oh, good planning on your part. That a boy. Wait a minute, though.
Wow.
I'm just throwing you under the bus of you showed up late to work because you couldn't do it next week.
Well, I planned it for a Wednesday morning because normally we don't have anything on Wednesday mornings because usually we do the podcast on Tuesday, and I just wasn't thinking.
I got to get an oil change next week. I'm like you, JJ. I have to adult.
I'm going to Florida.
Good for you.
Yes.
Dentist appointment. Getting new tires on one of my cars.
Wow.
I mean, we are having the most fun next week.
Way to get wild, guys.
Once again, Lara wins.
Listen.
Shocking.
You're going to Florida. I'm going to Costco to get tires on my car.
Attaboy.
They're going to cost the trip. It'll cost the same, by the way.
Yeah.
Your trip and my trip. Mine will just be in Costco in Indianapolis, and you'll be in Florida.
Costco's great, man. You can get tires. You can get a mattress, a casket.
This is how we see my in-laws for the holidays, because they live down there.
You can.
Caskets?
Yeah, they sell caskets.
Yeah, they come in bulk. You buy 3 of them. You get
Wow.
And I'll take one pallet of caskets.
There you go. Man, oh man, man, oh man. All right, let's shift gears here. Let's talk about, I mean, another game, another heartbreaking loss, another fourth quarter unable to close out for the Colts, another chance for the Colts.
Speaking of burials,
I don't know if that's a I don't know if that's a good segue or not. But you know, here we are after Monday Night Football. Lara, I need something positive before we talk about the nitty gritty on this podcast.
Yeah,
JJ and Lara, give me something positive here. Was it Braden Smith on TJ Watt? Was it Dallas Flowers, the big kickoff return?
I was going to say kickoff return in general, because Isaiah Rogers Sr. and Dallas Flowers combined for 225 return yards, right? Is that correct?
Did you see that stat? The stat that they were the first pair of teammates? You got it?
Since Eric Decker and somebody
not as handsome
as Eric Decker back in like 2010 for the Denver Broncos. Vaughn, maybe?
Cassius Vaughn.
Not Cassius Vaughn.
He was a former Colt, Cassius Vaughn.
Was that it? Is that who it was?
Cassius Vaughn, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
But they each had 100 yards of kick returns in the game.
There you go.
Pretty good.
There you go.
That's a good one. Dallas Flowers, my guy from Oak Park River Forest High School.
I'm thinking of Cassius Marsh is who I'm thinking of. Is the former Colt. That's who I was, my brain went
the
to.
The defensive end?
That's who I was thinking of. I was like, if that guy ran kickoff returns, man, I missed that.
Hell of a
day.
That
would have been
fun. Hell of a day.
So, talk about Dallas Flowers a little bit, but Jelani Woods. So, this year there have been five tight ends to have at least eight catches for 98 yards in a game. Travis Kelce, who's done it three times because he's an alien. Mark Andrews, T.J. Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, and Jelani Woods.
Wow.
We're talking about four of the best tight ends in the NFL on that list, along with rookie Jelani Woods, who, he keeps this up, he'll be in that conversation in a couple years.
One thing to note on Jelani is he is playing with such a heavy heart, having those were his teammates who were killed at University of Virginia, all members of the football team, a few who he was particularly close with, shared lockers with one of the guy, was a mentor to another. So this has been an emotional past 2 weeks for him. He obviously was dealing with the injury itself and then grieving the loss of three of his teammates. No, he spent a lot of time with David Thornton trying to work through his grief and all that he was dealing with. Also spent a lot of time with Rodney McLeod, fellow UVA alum. And, you know, those guys really spent time grieving and mourning and going through that process. So I'm really happy for Jelani to have that type of a day from him as he continues to, you know, work through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. 98 receiving yards for Jelani, most by a Colts rookie tight end since Dallas Clark way back in 2003. So good on you for Jelani Woods, showcasing what he can do on Monday Night Football in front of a national audience. All right, this is the official Colts podcast. We're brought to you by WinBet, as we are every week. Again, I'm Matt Taylor, JJ Stankovic, Lara Overton coming up on the podcast. We're breaking it all down. We're talking about the loss to the Steelers. We're going to discuss how the Colts have found themselves in the situation that they're in. 4-7-1. We're going to do that on a segment called How Did We Get Here? And we'll talk about the best teams in the NFL right now and who might be in a four-team playoff in the spirit of college football. The college football playoff field, that's going to be announced this weekend as well. So 4-7-1 on the season. The Colts have lost five of their last six. And if you look ahead, four of the Colts' final five opponents, they have winning records. The Cowboys are up next. They're 8-3, followed by the Vikings at 9-2. Chargers at 6-5. They're still in the mix in the AFC. And then the Giants at 7-4. So following a trip to Dallas, as JJ said, he's going to be changing tires at Costco on that much-needed bye week for the Colts.
I'm paying someone
in week 14.
Yeah, I'm not doing it myself.
JJ's part
I
of the
respect
pit
that.
Crew. Costco pit crew.
You're good. Go. All right, so let's talk about how did we get here. All right, so this season – And I'm speaking for a lot of people. It's certainly not gone how we thought it was going to. I mean, there was so much hope and optimism and hype surrounding this team. I mean, way back at Graham Park in Westfield, we were thinking, all right, how many games is this Colts team going to win? Are they going to win the division? Are they going to get 9? Are they going to get 10, 11? Some people even had them going, you know, 12-5 on the season. And at best, the Colts can finish 9-7-1, and that's with five games to play, assuming they win all five games. So let's talk about a disappointing offense, Lara, as the Colts have failed to reach 20 points in 8 of 12 games on the season. They've scored one touchdown or fewer six times this year. We can talk about the sacks, a league-high 43, turnovers league-high 21. this offense, Lara, not producing like we anticipated at all. How did we get here to this point?
Wow, what a loaded question that is.
Just, no doubt.
Yeah, early on in the day, you know, you look at a number. There are a number of key areas that you have had, speaking of turnovers, that you have had turnover. And that starts up front with the offensive line. You certainly have your pillars up there with Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, and Braden Smith. But, you know, in the past, you've had these great depth pieces. You know, like you had Chris Reed and Mark Glowinski, and you've had, like, the Joe Hags who have been in there who have given you some security and some depth and, you know, some insurance at those positions. And when you're playing those young guys up front and haven't even given them the whole season because you started out with other guys in those positions, you've rotated that around. I think that is one component to it whatsoever. Also, turnover among the offensive coaching staff, and yeah, not just even this year. I do think that a lot of people underestimated how much you lost from a schematic standpoint when Nick Sirianni, not only Nick Sirianni left for Philadelphia, but took a lot of those guys along with him to join that staff there. So the challenge in back-to-back seasons for Frank Reich was trying to replenish so much of the talent that he had accrued. And one of the big jobs of head coaches isn't just so much coaching players, they're also coaching coaches, mm-hmm, and putting those guys in position of offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, you know, all quarterbacks coach, everything else that falls in line with those positions. And I think that people really failed to address how valuable some of those assets were that you lost, because Frank and Nick had such a great rapport where Frank could delegate some different things to Nick. And of course, then he was able to, you know, Marcus Brady was only growing into that role, of course, at that point. And then you have, of course, the departure of Marcus and the departure of Coach Reich, and you bring in Jeff. And among all of that as well is how much leadership you lost in terms of offensive veterans in two short seasons. You think, mm-hmm, about the retirement of Anthony Costanzo. Then, in the same season, you lose Jack Doyle and T.Y. Hilton. Those are all major, major factors. It's just this offense, for the most part, despite having a veteran quarterback, is very young and very inexperienced, despite a lot of, you know, the experience you have on the O-line, at least, you know, several components of the offensive line, not across the board like you have had in the past. You have not had some of those luxuries this season.
Right. The other part of it, Lara, in, you know, talking about Jack Doyle, is the impact he had on the Colts' run game was significant. I mean, it was huge. And
best blocking tight end in the game, as Frank Reich once called it.
And that was backed up by, you know, whatever Pro Football Focus grades you're looking at. That was not Frank blowing smoke. That was true. And the Colts' offense was always going to have to adapt to the league this year after what Jonathan Taylor did last year. There was always going to be something that the Colts are going to have to adapt to, but having to adapt to it without Jack Doyle, I think, made a bigger impact than people realize. And just looking at some of the numbers of how teams are playing the Colts, the way that the Colts have not been able to get their run game going, if I told you the Colts were near the bottom of the NFL in heavy boxes they're facing, you'd probably be surprised, because you're like, well, the Colts aren't running the ball that well. The Colts are, the teams are playing with eight or more men in the box against the Colts. Only two teams have faced fewer heavy boxes than the Colts this year. The flip side of that is that teams are playing light boxes against the Colts a lot, six or fewer defenders in the box. And the Colts have struggled to maintain their offense against that, because they're having so many negative plays. Mm-hmm. Colts lead the NFL with 122 plays of zero or fewer yards gained. And when
you're also not seeing explosive production in the passing game.
Right, which we'll get into in the next thing here. But when you don't have Jack Doyle in there, it took away a chess piece for this offense, mm-hmm, to counter how teams are going to start playing them this year. I mean, if you had six guys in the box and you had Jack Doyle blocking them, that's really good. And it's not that the Colts don't have guys who can block at tight end, but Jack was at the top of the league.
Well, he'd done it for a long time.
Right. He had experience. He had seen everything there you could see. And, you know, you just think about even that run on third down against the Steelers, where it looked like Pittsburgh was anticipating a run. You know, Jelani, he didn't really have much of a shot on that play with Alex Highsmith coming inside. But Jack Doyle, having 10 years of experience in the NFL, I thought about that play and I was wondering, I don't know if there's anything Jack could have done to cut off Highsmith on that play.
Right.
Essentially figuring that Highsmith was going to be doing that based on his experience.
Yeah, but you like his 10 years in the league in that situation.
And just the different concepts you can get into with Jack versus without Jack are different. And you've seen a drop-off in the run game this year. And I don't think it's all on the offensive line. I think some of it is just having to figure out what to do without Jack.
You really missed Kylan Granson, I feel like, this time out, too, as well. His being down with illness was a big factor, I think, as well, in trying to get some of that help up front.
Yeah, because he can do that stuff where he comes across the line at speed and he blocks down on guys.
It's just so baffling how we got here. I mean, I'm just talking big picture. I mean, I raised my hand because I remember saying back in training camp that this offense should be better than it was a year ago because of all the top-end talent. You got Nelson and Kelly and Smith and Jonathan Taylor and Matt Ryan at quarterback, Pittman coming off 1,000 yards, a healthy Paris Campbell, and what's the ceiling for a rookie like Alec Pierce? Nyheim Hines in the slot. They're going to use him as a slot receiver, and we all know how that worked out. He's not on the team here anymore. So for this offense to only be scoring 15 points per game, honestly, it's one of the biggest shocks in my 11 years on this job or in this job. I mean, if you would have told me at Grand Park that the Colts are going to have one of the worst offenses in the NFL, I would have said, how? There's no way. But the offensive line has had its issues. Matt Ryan is, you know, one of the leaders in the NFL in turnovers. The running game just isn't very diverse. Therefore, Jonathan Taylor can't get going like he did last year. The vertical passing game, which we're going to talk about, that's not there. And it's just a struggle for this team to move the ball, and it's even harder for it to score because of all the turnovers that they've suffered, primarily in plus territory.
The other thing of how we got here is I think if you told me at Grand Park, all those things are going to happen, and the Colts are going to be 4-7-1 going into this game against Dallas, I probably would have honestly said, oh, so they're going to be like a game out of the division. The Tennessee Titans are playing much better than I expected, than a lot of people around the NFL expected. I mean, they're 7-4. They are, frankly, cruising toward the AFC South title. And I didn't expect them to be this good. You trade A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
You know, Derrick Henry's coming off an injury last year. Ryan Tannehill's into his mid-30s, got the highest cap hit of any quarterback in the NFL. Their defense has had some issues. Harold Landry goes down before the season. But that team is such a good football team.
They don't have as much talent as the Colts. They do not.
Right.
But Tennessee gets the most out of their guys.
They're a better team.
Every Sunday.
Right. Yeah. They're a better team. There's no question about that.
The Athletic just ran a story today about how Ohio State should offer Mike Vrabel the world to go coach there. Please do.
Are they done with Ryan Day? Or
well,
we
I
just,
don't,
is,
you know,
is
it's
this,
probably more like down, down the road.
Give me a break.
I mean, boy, get Mike Vrabel to Ohio State.
I don't
That'd
know. I mean, I know that there is. I mean, look at Matt Rhule's contract that he's getting. You know, like there is just tons of money oozing out of college football.
Baby.
But I also don't know that after being in the league that you would want to go to college and have to deal with recruiting and NIL and transfer portal.
And hell no.
You know?
No, absolutely.
I mean,
free agency is hard enough.
So many coaches, as soon as they go to if they're in the NFL and they go to college, they go right back to the NFL.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, like Pete Carroll, you know, he was at USC, he was very successful there, broke some rules, goes right back to the NFL and
just a couple.
A tad, very successful head coach
Lloyd,
there.
A tad. Mm-hmm. All right, JJ, I know you did a case study on this, so let's have it. The vertical passing game, the Colts have completed or did complete 22 passes of 20 yards or more in their first six games. They have just 11 since. They rank 18th in passes over 20 this season. They've got just two passing plays of more than 40 yards on the year. They rank 30th in that department. As you said, teams are daring the Colts to challenge them down the field, and the Colts just aren't able to routinely take advantage. How did we get here, JJ?
So it goes to how teams are playing the Colts. That's where I want to start with this. And I mentioned that the Colts are facing a lot of those light boxes with six or fewer defenders in there, essentially saying, okay, go run the ball. When the Colts pass in those situations, they're averaging, you know, 5.3 yards per play, which is not that's not going to get it done. And when the flip side of it is when teams are playing those heavy boxes, that's where you usually are going to see your downfield play action shots. You got eight guys in the box, you can draw the linebackers in and the safety in with play action and then hit something downfield. The Colts have one pass this year on 104 plays against heavy boxes, one pass that has traveled more than 20 yards in the air. That came against the Raiders in week 11 or week 10, whatever week that was. That's a problem. When you get those mm-hmm. heavy boxes, you are not even getting to those downfield shots. The other part of it is the Colts are facing a lot of too high safety looks, which usually is going to take away those downfield shots. But the Colts, despite facing the 15th most too high safety looks on passing plays this year, they only have 5 deep pass attempts against those. That is the lowest in the NFL. So they're not forcing the ball downfield when opportunities may present themselves. They are not pushing it downfield. There are a multitude of reasons that could go behind this. But ultimately, when you look at this offense and you look at the Colts having the lowest average depth of target in the NFL at 6.5 yards per attempt between Matt Ryan and Sam Ehlinger, that's beyond the line of scrimmage.
Right.
This is where if the shots are there, they're not taking them, or they're not capitalizing on situations where they could take a shot downfield.
Jeff Saturday talked about this last night, actually, on Colts Roundtable Live. Here was his response on the vertical passing game or lack thereof on offense right now for the Colts.
Yeah, listen, there's no hiding from it. We haven't been nearly as good at that as we needed to. We had one good ball up to Pittman, you know, late in the game on the post route that he went up and got. We had a shot to Alec that we need to make that catch on the side on the sideline. But, you know, the issue for us is, you know, it has to be a balance, right? Before, as the season was progressing, we weren't protecting very well, and so the ball had to come out a little bit quicker. And now, as our line is getting better kind of each and every week, it's how much, you know, how long can we hold it to get the ball down the field, what the receiver's routes are, and the timing of those throws. But we have to be better at taking those shots and making the most of our shots. And, again, like I tell all the guys, you may only get one a game, you know, going through the list of receivers and tight ends that we have who can be out there. But when you get the one, it's got to be an explosive. Mm-hmm. And so we have to continue to work on it. But there's no doubt with lack of vertical threat, defenses walk down. And that's really what Pittsburgh did early in the game is they walked their safeties down. It becomes hard to tell the difference between 4 and 2 and who's the force player, which means who's helping in the run game. All of those things are because you're not challenging downfield. And so we have to be able to meet that challenge.
I think that's a fantastic answer. I think he's exactly right. And JJ, I also think there's a correlation here because the Colts have the second most 10-play drives in the NFL with 27.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Because if you're not scoring, it doesn't matter how many plays you've got or you're
running.
And the problem,
Matt, with those drives, like I mentioned earlier, the Colts lead the NFL in plays that go for 0 or negative yardage.
Mm-hmm.
So if teams are forcing you to – hey, you're going to have a 10, 12-play drive. That's how a lot of defenses want to play, is bend, don't break,
right?
And you make the mistake,
right?
Not us.
It takes the Colts several plays per drive to move the ball and to get into a position
it's
to score.
It's just exhausting.
Right,
yeah.
And they just don't have a lot of big plays. And like you said, JJ and Lara, when you can't push the ball down the field, negative things really hurt you. Duh, Mr. Obvious. But what I mean by that is you're not able to overcome them, like penalties and sacks
and fumbles.
Tackles for loss.
Right.
Those things are drive killers. When you get off schedule at all in this offense, you just don't have the ability to make up yardage with big plays.
Right. When you're not explosive. I mean, this is how Gus Bradley – it's funny because everything we're talking about, this is how Gus Bradley wants his defense to play and has played
and
this
take
year.
Advantage of, yeah.
You don't allow explosive plays. You stop the run.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you trust that someone's going to make a play or the offense is going to make a mistake. And that's where that is exactly how teams are playing the Colts right now. And the Colts have struggled to find solutions against it.
All right, so 5 games to play. Moving on, let's take a look at, just sort of the outlook for the remainder of the season. 5 games to go. Lara538.com. They give the Colts just a 2% chance of making the playoffs. 4-7-1.
Mm-hmm.
We know about the difficult schedule starting this Sunday night in Dallas. The Colts are in danger of missing the playoffs for the 6th time in the last 8 years, Lara, after being so promising, you know, last year this time with Carson Wentz and the Colts, I mean, whatever was the streak, they had won, you know, 6 of 7.
Had a 98% chance of making the playoffs with 2 games to play.
Right. You know, just win one of those games against the Raiders and Cardinals and you're in. Lara, how did we get here? How did they drop so far off of playoff contention?
You didn't win the games you should have. You let too many games slip away, too many winnable opportunities that you did not capitalize over the course of this season.
And another really slow start to the year.
Another slow start. I mean, the thing was, the Houston tie and then the game in Jacksonville, like, I was kind of like, all right, Jacksonville is just that anomaly. It's a weird, it's like I call the Bermuda Triangle for the Indianapolis Colts, where just weird, crazy things happen. So, like, you know, it kind of was like, all right, Houston, you're still finding your footing as an offense. Whatever. Like, Matt Ryan's getting established, all of those things. Okay. Then you come home and you win against Kansas City. And I'm like, all right, this is what we're working with right now. Okay. This is an indication of what this team can do moving forward. And just, it's head scratching when you have a game like that, and part of the reason that some have said that, you know, for that win by Indianapolis was more so that Kansas City was overlooking the Colts and, you know, kind of played down, so to speak.
There's a lot of self-infliction in that.
A lot of it.
Yeah, a lot of that. But just, I'm going back and now I'm kind of looking over. So, and you win in Denver, you win against Jacksonville. To me, where it really started to unravel is week 7 at home against the Titans. That was where I really felt like that was a dagger to this team in terms of the characteristics were there of the flaws within this team that they were not going to be able to overcome to put themselves in contention to win the division.
And it hasn't been the same season, right?
It hasn't.
Next day was the Sam Ehlinger news.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
But then even, you know, you lost a very winnable game against Washington,
yep.
A game you should have won there. And you feel like that, okay, maybe that could have tilted things, but still, I think everything really hinges on the fact that you come home, you're playing Tennessee, you had gotten embarrassed down there just 2 weeks prior. You knew exactly the team they were going to be. You knew the magnitude of it. You knew how they were going to attack you and what you were going to, you know, have to do, how you were going to have to exploit them, and the opportunities that you were going to have to capitalize on, and you just failed to do it.
And I think that's such a good point, too, because the Colts came off that win over Jacksonville. You score 34 points, and you're thinking, okay, offense, they've found their rhythm. It's taken them 5-6 weeks.
Yeah.
But they've got some solutions now. Jonathan Taylor didn't play in that game. He's coming back. You're feeling pretty good. And then to go and lose to Tennessee by 2 scores, you know, a 9-point loss, yeah, I think you're totally right. That took, at 3-3-1 at that point, you're still like, all right, you can still make a run, but that took a lot of wind out of this team's sails.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, let's transition. Let's talk about big picture in the NFL. That's something that we rarely do here on this podcast because we're so focused on the Colts. But this idea popped in my brain because I was watching a lot of college football over the weekend. I just kind of had it on the background on the TV, eating turkey, hanging out with the family. College football playoff field, that's going to be unveiled on Sunday, right, following all the conference championship games. So hypothetically, if there was a 4-team NFL playoff field, regardless of conference, right? So you got 32 teams. They're not all playing the same schedule, which is like college football. So as of right now, who would be in? Who's your top 4 teams in an NFL playoff field, just like college football? I've got the Eagles. Here are the teams that I've got in the bucket, if you will.
You have 10.
Well, I got the teams with the best records.
Holy moly.
No. You got to pick 4, and you got to tell us exactly where they are.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But that's what I'm getting at. So your top teams right now, if you will, and this is just like college football, right? The top 10 teams are in contention. They need some things to kind of break their way. But if the playoffs started now, teams in contention, you got the Eagles at 10-1, Chiefs and Vikings at 9-2, Dolphins, Bills, Cowboys all at 8-3, and then Ravens, Bengals, Titans, 49ers, all of those teams, those 4 teams have a record of 7-4. So, Lara, who are your top 4 teams and seed them right now in an NFL playoff field just like college football?
All right, I'm giving the number 1 seed to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
That is my 1 seed.
Me too.
Then,
same. Okay.
Too. Okay.
Clean sweep.
Okay.
Yep.
My 2 seed is the Philadelphia Eagles.
Same.
3 seed, Dallas Cowboys.
Same.
4 seed, Miami Dolphins.
Seriously?
Oh, wow.
How do
you guys have
do
the same?
Yeah,
the same deal.
Exactly the same.
Yes.
Damn. Exactly the same.
Bracketology,
I agonized
baby.
Over the Dolphins versus the Bills for the 4 seed, but I'm like,
dude,
it's my playoff. The Miami Dolphins are so much fun. Put them in.
Here's the thing.
On that criteria alone.
Yeah.
Here, I was watching Bills Lions texting Matt Taylor on Thanksgiving, and I was like, The Bills are going to barely escape the Lions.
Take them off
like,
Thanksgiving.
That was,
get them out.
That was,
the College Football Playoff Committee would be
it.
Like, they would be like, get them out of here.
They would, absolutely.
Yeah. Also, head-to-head goes to Miami right now.
Yeah, so yeah. There you
I'm
go.
I'm shocked that we all have the Cowboys in at 8-3.
Listen, I would not be shocked if Dallas came out of the NFC.
You know what? After that whack-a-mole in the kettle on Thanksgiving Day, they're taking it all. They're taking it all. Peyton Hendershot, the Hoosier,
Hendershot, well, wide the left side, and he's in the end zone. And now he's in the kettle. Crash the timeline. The Peyton Hendershot in the bowl game. No one's got the Vikings in, huh?
No.
Do you want to know? So, I know I like to throw out some word salad of numbers, but DVOA is the efficiency statistic that usually tells you how good you are. Do you want to guess where the Minnesota Vikings rank 1 to 32 in DVOA?
24.
22nd.
Oh, I'm
at
so
9-2.
Damn.
There's always
so
one
close.
Team every year that like drastically outperforms record-wise what
do
the
you
rest
need
of
to go
numbers.
To the DVOA over the bye week to
actually,
get your license
I do.
Plate
I need
renewed,
to actually
by
get some new plates
thing?
At the BMVOA
the
BMV, or whatever it is.
The DVOA and the war and the whip and the
point is
runners in scoring position.
Minnesota Vikings are probably outperforming a lot of their actual
hey,
play this
you know
year.
What? That's a game I find very interesting for the Colts coming up on the calendar, by the way. Yeah. That's
still TBD, but it'll probably be a Sunday 1 o'clock.
I think that'll be a Sunday, yeah. I am very interested, though, on how that matchup unfolds.
I'm excited to hear the Gjallarhorn.
That's the bugle? Is that what that is?
It's called the Gjallarhorn.
Oh.
The bugle?
I thought it was a Yaller. Is it Yaller or Gallop?
I think it's Gjallarhorn.
Gjallarhorn. I thought it was Yaller. I got the Bills in. I got the Bills at 8-3. The Bills would be my number 4 because I think they've got some really good wins at the Rams. I know they're kind of down, but that was Week 1.
Rams
it was
are going to give a top 5 pick to the Lions.
But they trounced Tennessee. They beat Baltimore on the road. They beat Kansas City on the road. Green Bay. They lost to the Vikings, but the Vikings needed that miracle to beat them in that game. Cleveland's a good win. They beat the Lions on a short week on Thanksgiving in
Detroit.
With
everything that went on that week with the snowstorm. Yeah.
Give me Josh Allen. Give me that offense. They're in my college football playoff.
Yeah, but I mean, the narrative of Tyreek Hill going up against the Chiefs in a theoretical playoff game, which I kind of hope we see, because that game could be fireworks between those two offenses. That could be fun.
Wow. All right.
I'm just—it's my playoff.
Okay, so
I'm taking the narrative.
The teams of the Ravens, Bengals, Titans, 49ers. All of those teams are 7-4. Those teams, which do you think is going to be the surprise team that's still there, like conference championship weekend?
I think the Niners are very dangerous right now.
Yes.
Like since they traded for Christian McCaffrey, that has added a completely new dynamic to that offense. I find them incredibly intriguing going into December.
So I watched the
Tennessee.
I watched all the Bengals Titans game on Sunday.
Tennessee was the one seed last year. And what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tennessee, unfortunately for them, they probably don't get the benefit of the doubt. The team that gets the benefit of the doubt for me is the Bengals. Because I watched I watched all that game on Sunday, and I love how the Bengals have morphed into kind of a different team without Ja'Marr Chase. They're going to drop him back in this week. But did you see Karras? Where he was coming off the field.
He's Indianapolis boy.
Yeah.
Cathedral High School product. Yes. Teddy Karras.
He's coming off the field. Teddy Karras. He's coming off the field. And he's yelling like, F you. And he's not yelling at anyone. But the Bengals won such a physical game that, like, I want my offensive linemen coming off of a win against the Titans. Everyone should be doing that. Because it is such a street fight for 60 minutes against the Titans that if you win as an offensive lineman or a D lineman, you should feel great. After that.
Also, Teddy Karras, I did a story about him and his family because he went to the Super Bowl with the Patriots.
He would need to repent after that.
He comes from like generations of NFL offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. It is unbelievable. Like his family.
And his dad, Coach Marion.
The lineage is nuts. Like
is he related to Alex Karras?
Yes.
From Blazing Saddles?
I wouldn't know.
His grandfather, Ted, and great-uncles Lou and Alex played in the NFL in the 50s and 60s. Father Ted played
during the 87 season.
Yes, there you go.
Seventh
you
family go. Member over three generations to play football in the Big Ten.
How about that? That's incredible.
Yeah.
Matt, did you mention the Jets at 7-4?
I did not, no. My bad.
What's going on there, by the way? Mike White? Holy my.
Yeah, right.
I got in a I my brain kind of broke yesterday when our coworker Chris Albrecht comes in and he goes, I got a take. If the Jets had kept Sam Darnold, they would be 9-2 this year. And I'm like,
who has time to think about that?
Yeah, and my brain kind of broke because I was like, I don't think you're right, but maybe you are. I don't know. Shout out to the Jets, by the way, because it's 7-4 and having to bench the quarterback who was the number 2 overall pick 2 years ago because the rest of your team is so good that you kind of have to do it. I don't know if they're going to be a Super Bowl team this year, but I like what they're doing there. I like what Robert Saleh is doing there.
Yeah, no doubt. No one saw that coming. Everybody thought, okay, at the beginning of the season, who are the teams that you can just cross off? The Jets were kind of in that discussion. They're right there. They're in the mix in the AFC for a wild card
team. The Jets
and
Giants are both 7-4.
Yeah.
And the Colts are 4-7-1, and the Denver Broncos are 3-8.
Yep.
Who saw that coming?
That's incredibly random. Also random is my thought of the week to close out here.
Okay.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right, Larry, if your car.
Oh, my God, I know.
What type of car do you run?
Well, I'm test driving one at the moment.
Oh.
So, yeah.
How's it going?
It's very
wonderful. You got to pull the trigger?
Yeah,
what is it?
So it's a Toyota 4Runner. So.
Ooh.
Yes.
We had one of those. We had a rental experience in one of those.
Yes.
Yeah, spacious.
So, thanks to Toyota of Muncie. I'm
spacious.
Driving that around right now, testing it out.
All right. Well,
an NAL deal there?
Yeah. What's that?
NAL deal with Toyota of Muncie?
I don't know.
Well, if that 4Runner, Larry, if that ran on stupidity, where would you go to refuel the 4Runner?
Okay, I did not look ahead at the question of the week. Sometimes at the random flaw of the week, because sometimes I like to just think. I like to think on the fly.
Organic.
And this came to me right as soon as I read it. The airport.
Oh,
there is
yeah.
Seriously.
Great answer.
So many stupid things happen in the airport. Like, I actually think that people's brains break, to quote JJ, like entering the airport. Like, they're fully functioning humans when they park their car, but upon entering the terminal, just a complete cerebral collapse.
Yeah.
Like,
and
the guy,
I'm always behind that person.
Like the guy that takes his shoes off on the plane.
Oh.
Like, what part of your brain says this is okay or this is a good idea?
Or like, so I have TSA pre-check because I travel quite a bit. So I always go through pre-check.
You're not waiting for anybody or anything.
Absolutely. Like, if there is a patience meter, I am -0 on the patience meter. Like, I will show up at the last minute. Like, I don't want to have an extra second to spare. I get there and I want to be like walking straight onto the plane. But like, I'll go to TSA pre-check and make.
And
I've
witnessed this too. It's great.
Oh, absolutely. What do you mean I can't bring these 4 gallons of water onto the flight with me, right? Like, like people act like it's seriously, like people get in line like they have never flown before in their lives. Like,
yes.
It's unbelievable.
And like, you get those people at the airport too who are like, oh, I don't know where my gate is, and they're just standing right in the middle with all their bags, and it's like, pretty clearly, there are only 2 ways to go at Indianapolis International Airport.
I'm also going to say this, and I love kids. I don't have kids, but you guys both are obviously parents. There are fewer things more infuriating to me than people who let their children pull the little wheelie luggages that hold like 3 things in them because they're the size of maybe like a small backpack, and they're small children, so they're like teetering around and they're rolling the bags, and then they're just in the middle of the way, and it's like, this is not efficient.
Okay,
I'm just rolling over
okay.
Toddlers.
Worst people at
like,
the airport.
I am lead blocker. I am up front throwing elbows.
Okay. So I don't think Indy International. Do they have a people mover?
No.
Like the moving sidewalks?
Yeah, the moving sidewalk.
They have a few sidewalks, yeah.
I always forget. I haven't flown out of it enough. But the worst people are the people on the people mover who are standing there. They're on one side and their luggage is on the other side and they're not
blocking
moving.
Everything. Yeah.
And I'm just like, don't you understand that this gets you there faster? It's not for you to be lazy and to not get your steps in.
No.
You can go there faster.
I want no part of the people mover. I'm walking
Lara's
and I'm moving and
mover.
I am, oh my God.
Usually I'm walking faster than the people on the people mover.
Without question.
Yeah.
It is a personal challenge that I like to, I'll get eyeballs on somebody. I'm like, all right, guy in the green, we're getting past him. You know, like just he's on the people mover. I'm on the, you know, regular
but like,
walkway.
If you're rushing to get to your gate, because you have a connection or something. Like, this doesn't happen at Indy International, but it happens at O'Hare all the freaking time. If you're on the people mover because you have 5 minutes to get to your gate and that person's doing that, all I want to do is, like, okay, where's Quentin Nelson? Just run him over. Like, I need, like, Grover Stewart to, like, push the pile down the people mover so I can get to my flight.
Man, this turned into an airport.
I know, I know.
Okay, so my one is similar related to travel. I am going to the left lane of a two-lane split highway.
Oh,
because
good call.
You get people who just sit there, and they're going the speed limit, which is not safe, in fact.
Nope.
And they're just sitting there, and, you know, you try to, like, flash your lights at them, like, hey, I'm trying to go because there's a truck coming up on my right that is now passing both of us, and that is extremely unsafe. Mm-hmm. But they're just dup, 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 and you're just like, who taught you the rules of the road? The left lane is for passing, not for cruising. Once you pass, you get back into the right lane. And then when you have to pass again, you get into the left lane. You do not ride the left lane. And if you're going to ride the left lane, do not ride it at 69 miles an hour on a 70.
You got to be up to speed if you're just going to chill in that left lane, right?
Yep.
Because, you need to be the fastest car on the road at all times.
Because going down 65 where they're, like, the whole road is trucks, you're like, then you're getting boxed in by trucks who are going the speed limit.
Same, they're going the same
they're
speed
going the same
in
speed,
two different lanes.
But they're trucks. So I cannot emphasize that enough.
They
that
are
what
trucks.
What you are doing if you are in the left lane and just riding the left lane is being wildly unsafe and wildly stupid. So that's where I'm going. I would never run out of gas on a cross-country trip.
Well, what do they say? Common sense is not a gift. It's a punishment. Because you have to deal with everyone who doesn't have it.
Oh, I've never heard this.
Isn't that what they say?
I like that saying.
There you go. So that turned more into pet peeves than where you're going to refuel your car that runs
on. Well, I don't know. Mine start with a lot of stupidity.
On silliness there.
Yeah.
Maytay.
Yes.
Here's what I would actually do.
Okay.
I would put my car in the garage and, like, an EV plug-in. I would take a USB cord. I would open the Twitter app, and I would just plug it into my car and leave it.
That's one. That's a good one right there. Just, plug that car into social media.
Thanks, Elon.
Yeah, you'll have fuel for the rest of your life.
Elon, I don't need your dumb cars that catch on fire all the time. I can just plug it into your stupid app.
I was secretly hoping that Twitter was going to bomb 2 weeks ago. Just get this whole thing out of here. I do not want this in my life anymore. Because quite frankly, and you both know this about me, the only reason I have Twitter is
for
news, is for work, so I can stay up to date. Anyways, that's a complete tangent. Lara, Colts 360 this week. What do you got?
Colts
it's going to air Saturday night and Sunday morning. Yes,
Saturday night and Sunday morning. Mo Alley Cox is our player guest in studio. As always, our conversation with interim head coach Jeff Saturday. And a couple of really cool special segments with the week upcoming. It is My Cause, My Cleats. The game in Dallas is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be showcasing a couple of guys who are supporting kicking the stigma with their cleats this weekend.
Fantastic. JJ, what's going on at Colts.com?
Yeah, I'm also going to talk to a player or two about what they're supporting for My Cause, My Cleats this week. So that'll be up on Colts.com. We got our usual mailbag coming in tomorrow. So you can submit your questions for that on Colts.com/mailbag.
Yep.
And just looking ahead to one more game before the bye week.
Yep.
It's been a long
latest bye.
Weeks.
Yeah, latest bye in the NFL, for sure.
Was this the same bye? I feel like this was the same time we had bye week last year.
Yeah. That's a long season.
It is very long. I mean, you talk about training camp. I mean, you're talking about from late July to December without an extended period of time
off.
Got
one weekend off.
Yep. No
doubt.
That
was after the Thursday night game.
We're loaded up on audio as well. Colts Roundtable Live from last night. Daily updates Tuesday through Thursday, or I should say Wednesday and Thursday this week. Off a day because of Monday Night Football. Inside Football with Rick Venturi. That's going to drop tomorrow to beat the 8-3 Cowboys. His blueprints there. Todd Archer, he covers the Cowboys for ESPN.com. He's going to join Casey and Bill this week on Know Your Foe. And then Colts Happy Hour with JMV is back on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan on Friday. And then probably Sunday, or I should say Monday morning-ish for instant reaction there.
Bright
after
and
the,
early.
Yeah, the, after morning. The late arrival from Sunday Night Football in Dallas. So all of that loaded up for you. Colts.com and the Colts Audio Network. JJ and Lara, thanks for the time and the entertainment this week. As always, Lara, stay out of the airport. It's good for everybody if you just don't travel this
week. It's true. Giddy up. Let's go to Dallas.
Only travel with the team. We are locked and loaded all week long. This is the Colts official podcast. Again, for Lara and JJ, I'm Matt Taylor. And we will talk to you back on the normal schedule on Tuesday of next week following Colts and Cowboys. Leading you in and reacting, heading into a bye weekend for the Colts. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for listening to the official Colts podcast. So long.